Today's learning is Le'iloi Nishmas Chaim Yitzchak ben Michal Shlomo, my dad, whose yard site is Bo Bayom today, 26 years later. His aliyah, his neshama should have an aliyah. It should be an aliyah for his neshama. This is the TTPA, Tani Talks Pirkei Avos, this year where we talk a mission of Pirkei Avos per day with sagely commentary and practical advice to say. We are looking at Perek Hey, Mishnah Hey, Chapter 5, Paragraph 5, talking about 10. Asara Nisim Nasu Lavasinu Bebeis HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles done for our forefathers in the Beis HaMikdash. Let's read it all and then we'll come back. Lo Hipila Isha Mireach. Mireach. Besar HaKodesh Velo Hisriach Besar HaKodesh Me'olam Velo Nir Azavuv Bebeis HaMit B'chaim Velo Ira Keri Lekoin Gadol Be'yom HaKippurim Velo Kibu Geshamim Eish Shel Atze Hamaracha Velo Netzcha Haruach Es Amud Ha'ashan Velo Nimtza Pesul Be'omer Ovishtei Alachem Ovilachem Apanim Om Nimtza Fufim Umeshachem Umrevachem Velo Hizig Nachash Ve'akrav Yerushalayim Me'olam Velo Amra Adam Lachavero Tzarli Hamakum Sha'alin Be'Yerushalayim. So 10 different things that happened that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, 10 miracles were performed for our forefathers during the time of the Holy Temple. This is for the benefit of the people. Other miracles also occurred in the temple. You could see Yoma in Chaf Aleph, but they served as testimony to the presence of Hashem in the temple, did not directly benefit the people, Tversky points out. In contrast to the other sets of 10 listed so far in the chapter, these miracles are not mentioned in or derived from the Torah, but were taught by the teachers of one generation to the teachers of the next generation. The Mishnah therefore tells us what they were, as Tosfos Yontif points out. It's a matter of dispute whether these miracles took place only in the first temple, the first Beis HaMikdash, where the presence of God was more evident, or also in the second temple as well. So there were 10 miracles. So a woman did not miscarry because of the aroma of the sacrificial meat being roasted. The meat of the holiest offerings, Kodshei Kodashim, was roasted in the temple courtyard where it had to be eaten by the Kohanim. In addition, at least some parts of the animal offerings were burnt on the altar. The aroma of the roasting spread throughout the temple area. This aroma could have stirred in a pregnant woman such a strong desire to taste some of the meat after she would miscarry. God forbid, if she didn't have this meat, if she didn't have some. Miraculously, no woman ever miscarried for this reason, Rashi points out. The sacrificial meat did not spoil. The parts of the animal that were to be burnt on the altar sometimes stayed on top of the altar for several days before being burnt, as Rashi points out in Ritva and Yoma, who says that this was most likely to occur when an animal was slaughtered on Friday because its parts may not be burned on Shabbos. Also, the meat of the shalamim offerings could be eaten for 2 days, although these meats were often exposed to warm weather. They never become spoiled or infested. A fly was never seen in the temple's butchering area. If animals and flies you would think would be attracted to the various blood intestines of the animals that were processed in the temple, but besides demonstrating the presence of God, the miracle also made life more present for the Kohanim who dealt with the offerings, and they didn't have any of these creatures or these flies flying around in the butchering area. Discharge was not experienced by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol had to perform almost all the temple service on Yom Kippur. If he would become Tamei, he would have to be replaced by the assistant, the Skan Kohen Gadol. While this did in fact happen several times in Yuma 12b and 47a, it was caused only by other sources of Tumah and never by a certain type of discharge. Rashi points out this miracle occurred in order to spare the Kohen Gadol the embarrassment of being disqualified because of such a thing, as Rav points out. In addition, rain did not put out the fires of the piles of the wood of the altar of the Mizbeach. Although the fire of the altar of the Mizbeach was exposed, it was never put out by the rain, Rav points out. This miracle benefited the people because they were forbidden to eat their shares of the offerings until the required parts were burned on the altar, as Tversel points out. In addition, wind did not come to the and overcome the column of smoke that arose from the altar, that arose from the Mizbeach. The smoke rose in a straight column. Even on windy days, Rav points out, the air in the courtyard thus remained fresh, as Rambam points out, which benefited the Kohen working there. In addition, besides for all these things, no disqualification was found in the Omer and the Shtei Lechem or the Lechem upon him. The Omer was a mincha, a flour offering brought on behalf of the entire nation on the second day of Pesach. It consisted of flour from barley of the new crop. Once it was offered, all the new crops of grain, chadash, became permitted to be eaten. Sivayikra, the barley for the Omer, had to be harvested the night before it was offered, and they did not harvest more than necessary. Therefore, if the harvested grain became disqualified during the day, it cannot be replaced. Thus, the Omer cannot be offered that year, Rav points out. She'alechem was a mincha offering brought on behalf of the entire nation on Shavuos. Once it was offered, grain of the new crops became permitted for use in the temple offerings, as Vayikra points out. The loaves of the she'alechem had to be baked before Yom Tov because baking them on Yom Tov was forbidden, Pesachim points out. Thus, if the loaves became disqualified on Yom Tov, the she'alechem could not be offered that year, Rav points out. The lechem apanim were 12 loaves of bread that were arranged on the table, the shulchan in the temple, each Shabbos, and removed the following Shabbos, as Vayikra points out. Baking them on Shabbos was forbidden, as Menachel shows us. Therefore, if they became disqualified on Shabbos, no new ones could be baked to be placed in the Shulchan that Shabbos. As a result, the Shulchan would stand empty until the next Shabbos, Rashi points out. These three offerings could become disqualified in many ways, such as by coming into contact with a source of Tumah, by being taken out of other required locations, by being prepared by disqualified Kohen, or by being prepared improperly. It was a great miracle that none of these things ever happened, as Melech HaShlomo points out. The people stood in the temple, pressed together, but they bowed, stretched themselves on the floor in plenty of space. On certain occasions, especially Yom Kippur and the pilgrimage festivals like Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, the temple courtyard was filled with Jews who came to pray and to bring offerings. At times, they literally had no room to move. Yet, when the time came for the people to bow down, such as when the Kohen Gadol pronounced the special name of Hashem during the Yom Kippur service, a miracle occurred and the area became spacious enough for everyone to bow. Not only that, but there were four amos of space between each person and his fellow so that no person would hear another person's private prayer, as Rashi points out. And no snake or scorpion ever harmed anyone in Yerushalayim. Some commentators understand this to mean that no one was ever bitten by a snake or scorpion, Miri points out. Others understand it to mean that no one ever died from a snake or a scorpion. You can see Rashi as well. And the person did not say to another person, the place where I lodge in Yerushalayim is small for me. Great numbers of Jews came up to Yerushalayim for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. They all needed a place to stay. Nevertheless, no one ever complained that his accommodations were too small, as Rav points out in the second explanation. So all these miracles happened in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. And it should be Zocha that we all have the Beis Hamikdash speedily in our days. We should wait and pray that Mashiach comes, that we're hoping for Mashiach and we're looking for Mashiach. And it's apropos that this is the mission we're talking about today. My dad's yard sale, because he was always waiting, always ready, always wanting Mashiach to come, always wanting the Beis Hamikdash to come, always thinking about it. So too, we should be thinking about Mashiach, have our bags packed and ready, and we should be zoche that by learning about these wonderful miracles that happened during the Beis Hamikdash, we should be zoche that the Mikdash does come again speedily in our days, and may that day, in fact, be today. Join us next time as we talk about 10 things that were created on an Erev Shabbos here on the TTPA, and I'm your host, Tani.